Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
It just may be that the tide is turning, and that people will begin to compare the wonders of their computers and jasmoid portable wonder blots to the real wonder of the eye of a cougar. And although that eye may be of glass in a display at a local natural history museum, it may spark the interest in a child or a lonely soul looking for truth. Do yourself and your world a world of good. Make the effort to visit your local natural history museum soon, really soon. I did, and I've got lots of great discoveries to prove it, and here are more.
Talking to a gentleman here who, you look kind of like a nature guy. You look kind of like me in some respects, kind of a beard and a mustache, and you know. But anyways, you're here at the Natural History Museum. I'm just curious, why are you here, and what's happening with your day here?
Well, I knew I wanted to, when I came to San Diego, I wanted to stop in Balboa Park and try out the museums, and this seemed the inevitable first choice.
Why is that?
I have at times been a member of the society and taken the magazine and that sort of thing, not at the present, but I always knew you were here, and I'm having a great time looking for the bugs right now. I want to be sure I enjoy those before I leave.
Yeah. Now, where are you from?
Kansas City, Missouri.
Are you a nature guy?
I get out into the nature as often as I can, yeah.
Why is that? What is it about nature that you like or enjoy?
I don't have to do anything to make it run. It runs itself. It welcomes me rather than giving me a job to do. It's a good place to be that way.
And what do you think about the state of nature these days?
It's precarious. Just been reading about 9,500 degree temperatures up around the Arctic Circle and glaciers receding at an unprecedented rate, that kind of thing. I'm very concerned.
So you're one of these people who actually believes in some form of global warming, perhaps?
Well, the evidence seems to be there, yeah.
As we watch nature, look out and see the possibility that it may be impacted by some of these things, what does that mean to you?
Well, I drive less, walk more, try not to buy a lot of processed products and that kind of thing. Try to keep my footprint as light as possible.
Great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
What's your first name?
Samuel.
Samuel. And are you from San Diego?
I'm from Watertown, New York. It's the eastern end of Lake Ontario.
Uh-huh. And what brings you to the Natural History Museum here in San Diego today?
My daughter and her boyfriend, we promised them a trip before they started graduate school.
Great. So, now, are you a sort of a nature person? Do you like nature or
that's
natural
correct.
History?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. You're a guy who's getting a little older, just like me. What has nature meant to you throughout your life?
Peace, relaxation, a chance just to see how everything fits together in a particular spot.
We hear all sorts of tales about nature and its future and whether or not it's going to be able to survive in a very effective way. Do you think about that once in a while?
Frequently. I think unless we can control population, control energy, we're done for. And so we have too many people here to support as it is right now
mm-hmm.
on Earth.
Do you have any sense personally? I mean, you do think about this, I can tell, about how far out before we start to really feel these impacts?
We're feeling some impacts now, obviously, with the oil crisis and the Iraqi war, which is over oil. I predict probably 30 to 50 years it's going to start catching up with us, despite what the current administration says. I mean, the oceans are rising, ice is melting everywhere.
What do you think about the importance of science and having a society and a culture and a world that science can get a little out of hand too at times. It's science, after all, that helps to build the bomb, the bombers and the bombs and the things of that nature. But somewhere there has to be a mix.
I'm very science orientated. I believe in natural succession and evolution, despite what 60% of the people in this country believe are all sort of God squatters, in my opinion. But I think that if you don't understand how things are put together, how plants grow, how we can use resources without destroying ourselves, I think that's very important. And I think, unfortunately, science at the moment is out of phase or out of fashion.
If you could change something to get people to really pay attention, what might, any ideas what might work?
I would probably change Congress such that they were more interested in preserving things, in getting research started as we did in the 1960s. I'm a child of the 60s. I used to be in the space race myself. I think it's very important that we just acknowledge that we're having problems despite what we're being told by our leaders. I'm a forensic pathologist.
Oh, really?
So I spend a lot of time looking at evidence.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So, well, now see, that opens up another arena here. I had never thought about that. But if you were to look for the facts that would support the idea that things are dying at a faster rate, which would be kind of a forensic pathological perspective.
Yeah.
What evidence might you point to?
I go fishing in the Adirondack Mountains. A high percentage of the lakes now have no fish and have not had fish for a long time. And that's certainly part of our culture, that due to the acid rain problem. Trees are not growing as well as they used to, from what I can tell, in the different places I've been, in our farm and other woodlots. Those are some quick things. Also, just the fact that we spend so much time parked on the freeways because we didn't anticipate what we were going to need. And it costs us a huge amount of money to have valuable people sitting in traffic.
I often wonder if instead of red lights and green lights, we ought to have just a series of yellow lights, because at any particular time, half the world is sitting.
True.
You know,
that's a good approach.
Well, it's, you know, it's like, how many times have you sat there at a red light going, you know, I could go, you know, just a minor point, but it could make a difference, you know.
Yeah.
It's a pretty intelligent audience that I have. So you can share some real thoughts and real concerns, because that's what we're here to do, actually, on the Wild Side News.
Okay. I think the one thing that struck me the most indirectly has been the fall in population of fish in both the Atlantic, Pacific, and elsewhere. And in New England, there are vast numbers of fish processing plants that are now vacant because there are no fish to go in them. Lobsters are moving north. They used to be able to catch lobsters in Long Island Sound. Now you have to be almost up to the state of Maine to find a real lobster. And they're moving up the coast towards Labrador and beyond. So something's happening.
Well, those are really good, very precise examples of change,
mm-hmm.
change through time, which is part of the evolutionary process. Mm-hmm. And this is de-evolution, I guess, or it's an evolution of disaster, perhaps. It's hard really to know exactly. But I'm with you on this, and that's why I do what I do, trying to really get information that matters out there about nature and the environment and energy and the whole nine yards. And so I really appreciate that, and appreciate your thinking about it.
Okay, thank you. I've enjoyed my stay here in San Diego County.
Yeah.
Got a chance to go to the beach. We went to the zoo yesterday.
So who am I talking about?
Cynthia.
My name is Sydney.
All right.
Are you from San Diego?
No.
Where are you from?
From Syracuse, New York,
uh-huh.
right now.
Uh-huh. What brings you to the Natural History Museum today?
We just wanted to see fossils and dinosaurs and most of the things you see in the Natural History Museum.
Are you museum people?
Well, no, but we like science, and we think maybe more kids would benefit from more exposure to science and the scientific basis of life. Mm. So I'm glad they're having an open day for kids today.
Yeah, every Tuesday the museums open up, and that's kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
So you come from New York.
Uh-huh.
So why, are you urban or rural?
Well, we're rural. We live in Syracuse now. Both my husband and I are originally from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're just transplanted to New York, but both in medicine, and we see the benefit of having a scientific background, understanding life around us.
What do you think of life around you in the year 2005?
2005. Well, I think we need to pay more attention to the environment. Afraid we'll lose it. Afraid we'll mess up the ocean and the land around us so fast that our grandchildren might not have the opportunities that we have. There's been too much extinction already, so we have to get busy.
And as you know, as a person who really understands science and life, okay, mm-hmm. that these things are extremely interrelated and extremely
right.
sensitive to
mm-hmm.
change. And it gets a little spooky once in a while?
It does. It certainly does. You know, there's, well, like, I was just at the Scripps Institute yesterday, and the quotes were on the wall there from Chief Seattle. So many cultures before us were thinking of how important the environment was and what a small part we are of that.
Now, I haven't done this before. I just make this stuff up as I go along here. But if you were, like, queen, or if you could be king, you know,
sure.
What might you actually say? What would be your edict or your mandate to humanity at this point?
Probably one would be, if you make a mess, clean it up. Don't leave it for somebody else or another generation. And I guess I would try to support the school so that, you know, kids would, I guess they would learn science was important.
That is, I think, one of the greatest losses that we've had, is that stupidity is king right now.
Yeah.
And I don't, until that changes, until that influence amongst the peers changes somehow, there's nothing that we can do to change that. So I don't know how we're going to do that exactly.
Well, I think the Natural History Museum is a good place to start.
You know, oh, it certainly
you
is.
You know, getting yeah. kids interested in this sort of thing early on will give a better respect for the environment and the part we could play in it. Maybe they'll be able to invent some new ways to live in the environment. I'm not against atomic power. I just want us to clean up our mess as we go along.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're from Syracuse, and San Diego here, it's rare to see kids playing outside. I'm just curious if that's the situation in Syracuse.
It's rare to see kids playing outside?
You'll rarely see any kids playing outside. It's bizarre, actually. So I'm just curious. I want to make sure that I have a real, you know, connection with what's happening on the planet.
Can
here.
I ask what the excuse is here?
I suppose fear that they're going to be abducted or something like that.
Well, I suppose there's a little bit of that everywhere. Certainly that in the city in Syracuse. But I find with all the electronic entertainment, I'm a pediatrician, so with all the electronic entertainment that kids have and adults have indoors, their parents probably didn't necessarily themselves grow up knowing that the outdoors was important for their growing up, and so they don't know that they should be making that not only an option but a have-to thing every day outdoors. Okay, kids, out the back door. That was a standard order for parents maybe 40, 50 years ago.
When we were growing up.
Yes.
Well, here's a good question, because there certainly is a lot of science and discussion, at least some anyways, about the fact that actually it's critical for children as they're growing up, since you're a pediatrician, mm-hmm. to really, you know, be exposed to the natural world. I'm
right.
just curious if you have some thoughts about that from your experience.
Very much so. There's so much that kids notice when they're 4 and 5 years old that if they are allowed and pushed to be outside, they can use it. That energy and that curiosity. But
what about the development of thinking and processes?
Well, you have to have time for that. If your curiosity and the time during each day is filled up with what parents seem now to think of as a small amount of television, maybe not more than 2 hours a day, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know. Their studies show that kids' reading level starts to drop per grade as they go through grade school if they have 2 hours or more of television So somehow some parents have gotten the message they should just make sure it's not more than 2 hours of television, but actually they could use that 2 hours outside, you know, just exploring how their grass grows and, you know, trying to raise a few beans in the back flower garden and, you know, trying to, you know, see where food comes from, you know, that you can do in a very small city lot or a flower pot even, you know, doesn't take a lot of land.
So in terms of a pediatrician, is there an age group that you sort of cater to?
Well, I see kids from infancy, from the newborn period right up through age 18 and off to college, but I also am a developmental pediatrician, so I particularly enjoy working with and evaluating children in the school age, range from, you know, 5 or 6 years of age through about 15.
You're a scientist, so these are hard questions, but I'm going to ask anyway. I'm just curious if you've been able to discern or feel or sense some sort of difference, perceptual difference that you perceive between kids that maybe have more experience in a more rural environment versus those who maybe are growing up inside these days, particularly with attention deficit disorder and things of that nature.
I think it's really more the whole environment, which includes the parents and the family's focus. So I see kids coming in from a rural environment where the parents really think entertainment is the Game Boy and the television and the computer, and you only go outside if you have to. And I see other families who really take advantage of the environment, and they may even live in the city. So overall, there's a little bit more opportunity for the children, and when they aren't given a whole lot of guidance or limitations by their parents, there's more statistical chance probably that more kids in the country would have more chance to do that sort of thing. But it really does depend on what is offered. I was a pediatrician in Vermont for a while, and up there the school requirements were that, you know, you had to be able to get your winter clothes on and your boots and mittens and everything before you could go to kindergarten, all layers. And most kids were really pretty much able to do that because they knew they could go outside and play in the snow. And so now I'm in New York as a pediatrician, I'm finding, you know, many parents feel like they really shouldn't send their kids out if they're not comfortable outdoors, which is usually anything under about 40 degrees, you know. So it's hard to get them to even have them outside 9 months of the year.
I've been developing a concept of what I call open-ended play. In other words, as they say, because in San Diego we see so really very few kids just playing, just open-ended without the structure
without
of the
structure,
TV.
Without, and, you must do it this way, sort of. Yeah.
Or that their lives are structured. And I keep imagining these sanctuaries where people could come and just do that. That they feel safe in just being able to go into that space, because otherwise I think many kids almost never have that.
You have a good point. The concept has been narrowed down to, in our culture, these little playland and the McDonald's thing that had this really small space with lots of plastic structures in it that they crawl around in and so on and explore, which they would have done under a bush or in a tree if they had a supervised space outdoors, which used to be the backyard. It could be bigger than the backyard. My mother recalls growing up on a farm of 80 acres, I guess, at that time, and having the free run of the whole place.
That's right. I grew up that way, and I'm really glad I did. You know, I have it's just a different way of looking at things. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I'm really glad. It helps me, I think, solve problems and kind of deal with the real world in ways that maybe get me through a little easier.
Yeah. You see your place in the world and the universe maybe a little differently anyway. It's a wonderful place to visit, and I'm real glad to be here.
Thank you. Well, a day at the Natural History Museum. You learn so many things at the Natural History Museum. It's really worth visiting. So I highly recommend it next time you're having a need to really just kind of immerse yourself into some really deep forms of wonder. And maybe you're in that in an urban environment. So visit your local Natural History Museum and really come to enjoy not only the exhibits, but the people who are here, because they also share a love for the earth. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet next time, it's Thursday, or on the archives, here on your Voice of the Earth, the Wild Side News.